If you went to go see your doctor 20 years ago and you told them that you had back pain, they would have recommended that you take a few days off work and that you rest, and, you know, bed rest might have been recommended. The more research that's coming out, we now know this is one of the worst things that you can actually do, because the longer you rest, the more deconditioned the tissue becomes and it prolongs the recovery. So having a, you know, certain movements are going to be better than others. And no, you might not want to go for a 5 kilometer run the day after you injure your back, but integrating some specific and mindful movements early is another important step in preventing it from becoming a more chronic problem.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to episode 218 of the Anthropology Podcast. Today, we are going deep on the idea of pain management, that chronic lingering thing you've had in your lower back or some other part of your body, especially after sitting for the last year. My guest today, Dr. Kirsty Griffiths, is a Canadian chiropractor and yoga teacher. She's launching her book called Back to Wellness. And what we're talking about today is getting into the nuances of how we manage both acute and chronic pain. Think of it as the biohacking and the brain hacking of how we actually start to get this pain in order, and some of the things you can be doing that you've probably never heard of. This is an area of particular passion for Dr. Griffiths. She is an amazing practitioner. I am so excited for you to have the opportunity to meet her, and welcome Dr. Kirsty to the podcast. Dr. Kirsty Griffiths, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation, and it's happening at an extremely exciting time for you because you have a new book coming out, which we are going to get into today, but we're going to have a discussion around pain management and the mind-body connection between pain. I know this is something a lot of us have been sitting for a very long period of time now, like the last year, and pain is starting to creep up to the surface. I'm wondering, before we jump into this topic, if you can share with everyone a little bit about your story so we have a sense of your background and why this is something that's so important to you.
Absolutely. So I'm a chiropractor and a yoga teacher. I practice downtown Guelph in Ontario, and my whole sort of niche is around mind-body medicine and using a mind-body approach to heal pain. Most people who are coming into my office, it is typically back pain. I think for a lot of people, they hear chiropractor and they think of us for back pain, but we do treat other conditions as well. And the reason why I kind of went down this road of wanting to treat chronic pain and tying these things together. So I was doing a pre-med program as my undergrad, and I knew I wanted to do something in healthcare, hadn't quite figured out what that was going to look like. And in my fourth year, I did some research with a prof who was also a chiropractor at the University of Guelph. And we were doing research on patients that have chronic pain and basically looking to see if we added a stimulus. We were using a capsaicin cream, so it has hot pepper extract in it. And if we put that on someone who has a chronic pain condition versus someone who doesn't have any pain, does the brain respond differently? And our research showed us that it does. And this supports the idea of central sensitization playing a role in how pain develops. And so for me, that was really fascinating. I knew, okay, I want to work with people in some sort of pain management context. And then I tied in some of the practice of yoga that I was doing in my own life and saw how that was affecting me and some of the things that I was trying to heal in my own body, and just thought, wow, this is such a powerful tool. So the first couple of years of my practice, I sort of spent figuring out, how do I integrate these two things together? And that ended up becoming therapeutic yoga programs that are geared toward pain management. So the one that I have right now is yoga for back pain.
I really love this idea, and I'm super interested in this notion of different things that can start to influence pain, because for anyone who's been in that situation, it is all encompassing for them. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of us have been trained, pain is something, it's there and we can take something and we can turn it off. But this idea of treating pain and actually alleviating it and removing the stimulus and the cause of the problem. It sounds so obvious when you say it, you should pull the tack out of your foot as opposed to taking the medicine that covers up the pain from the tack. Mm-hmm. And it's not how we've been trained. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, before we get into like techniques and some of those elements of the pain piece, what are some of the mindset things you've had to address as a chiropractor and as a clinician who deals with pain?
Yeah. So one of the things that we see very often, to kind of echo what you were saying, Megan, is that we have this idea that if something's bothering us, we can take something or do something and it's going to immediately fix the problem. And a lot of the patients that I'm seeing, because I do have an interest in chronic pain, by the time these people come to my office, they've already been living with pain for months and or years. So one of the first conversations that we have is, you know, this is not going to change for you overnight. And I actually use the language of, I wish I was a miracle worker, but I'm not. So the idea of laying you on the table and doing a couple adjustments and having you walk out of here and not experience pain again, that is not realistic. It's really a process. And that's actually reflected in the title of my book. I was playing around with what the subtitle would be. And we landed on a mind-body approach to managing your back pain, because healing or overcoming didn't feel like the appropriate word, because sometimes that's not the outcome that we're actually striving for. Rather than trying to eliminate the pain, we're trying to teach people and empower them to have better control over it so that it's not controlling them.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I love that piece. And managing the expectations, as you know, as a fellow clinician, I think that this is something that's really important. And one of my frustrations, and I'm saying this to my audience because I want you to know what our frustrations are as practitioners. One of my frustrations is people would come to me and they're like, this is my absolute last resort thing that I'm going to put into place. And again, there's this expectation that like a drug, we were just going to do one quick little detail or one quick intervention and suddenly pain was going to shift for them or their condition was going to shift for them. And when something has been ingrained for an extended period of time, the body adapts, the body starts to move into a new state of normal. And so I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about what that physiological state of pain really is and how we get the body to start to move back to a non-pain state. What are some of the physiological and neurological elements that need to be in place for us to do that?
So the whole idea of what you were saying, how you kind of develop a new baseline, your body thinks that pain is normal. In pain science, we call that central sensitization, and it has to do with a sensitization and sort of hypersensitivity of the nervous system. So the pieces to counteracting that, it's more complicated, like I said, than just doing an adjustment for this or any other modality on its own. It's usually a multimodal approach that is necessary. So with central sensitization, essentially you start out with something that is creating a pain problem. And this could be stemming from an initial injury or the onset of a more chronic condition. But over time, what's really interesting is that even once the tissue heals, so let's say it started out as a back injury, you know, you were deadlifting at the gym and you strained something. Within a couple of months, the tissue itself has usually healed. And this is a problem that we run into quite often where people will go and have imaging done, either an X-ray or an MRI or an ultrasound, and the report comes back normal. And that's very confusing for people because, you know, they're still experiencing a pain that is very real. The reason for that is that the experience of pain is being mostly created by the brain. So there is involvement from the tissue, but it is the brain that is kind of modulating that pain response. And over time, anytime we've had pain that's lasted longer than 3 months, the brain is essentially turning up the volume on pain, and it's also mixing up signals that are coming in. So something that 2 years ago wouldn't have been irritating, suddenly that's being perceived as painful. And so for that reason, it really does require an approach that has multiple prongs in the treatment.
So I want to talk about this in two phases, the acute management of something that's painful versus the chronic management of something that's painful. Because I would suspect in the realm of pain management, there's probably better things that we can do in an acute phase of an injury. So we're not actually converting things into that chronic state. I also know that as people left to their own devices, rarely do we do the things we are supposed to do. We're like, oh, I'll just suppress the symptom for a while. And then we're surprised that it continues to pop back up. In an ideal world, if we were all just to be like, yes, we're going to do exactly what you say, what do you want us to do when we've got that acute pain thing? What are some of those critical things we need to do to prevent this from becoming chronic?
So one of the things I coach my patients on is this idea that when an injury pops up, doing it, like you said, immediate interventions, that's an important thing. So that can look different for everyone. I do think having some sort of hands-on care is an important piece if it's a musculoskeletal condition that's showing up. So any kind of joint dysfunction or a muscle strain or a sprained ankle or anything like that, you know, seeing a chiropractor or a physiotherapist or a massage therapist, these are going to be practitioners who will be able to provide some pain relief, but also ensure that the tissue is healing properly. The other big piece is movement is very important. So if you went to go see your doctor 20 years ago and you told them that you had back pain, they would have recommended that you take a few days off work and that you rest, and you know, bed rest might have been recommended. The more research that's coming out, we now know this is one of the worst things that you can actually do, because the longer you rest, the more deconditioned the tissue becomes and it prolongs the recovery. So having certain movements are going to be better than others. And no, you might not want to go for a 5 kilometer run the day after you injure your back, but integrating some specific and mindful movements early is another important step in preventing it from becoming a more chronic problem.
Heat, ice, do you have recommendations? I feel like there's the great debate. It's like a monk debate. The heat people, the ice people, does it depend? What's your take?
Okay, this is a loaded question.
I know.
So the most up-to-date information is saying either or. So patient preference. You'll have some people who gravitate more toward heat, and you'll have other people who they've been trained as, you know, young athletes that you always put ice on there and ice works for them. Either one is okay. The only thing that I kind of warn people about is if it's an acute injury and there's a lot of swelling and inflammation already, sometimes putting heat on there, although they are saying now it's not a problem to put heat, however, it will drive that inflammatory response. So it might make it feel worse. You might feel okay when the heat is on, and then a couple hours later, you're like, oh, that is now pulsing. It feels like it has a heartbeat and it feels worse than it did before. So in the early stages of an injury, if it's, you know, a 7 to 10 out of 10 pain within the first 48 hours, I feel that ice is probably a safer bet. If it's more of a long-term, you know, lower level, dull achiness, heat or ice is usually appropriate.
I love that. And I was going to say, for people like me who suck at doing anything when they have an acute injury, it's good to hear these pieces. When we're starting to move into that more chronic state, I know yoga is something that you have leveraged. I want to talk a little bit about how you do that, because I know there's actually a lot of chiropractors also who are like, no go on yoga. Yoga's not good. So I would really love to hear your take, recognizing this is probably not an either or. And then I want to get into some of the other biohacking things that we can actually do to help support that chronic pain. But can you speak to the yoga piece and your unique background being a yoga teacher and a chiropractor?
Yes. So when I first started working at the clinic, I was also working at a couple of gyms. That's kind of how I got started with teaching yoga. And I knew, as I mentioned, that I wanted to find a way to integrate the yoga and the chiropractic. The early easiest way for me to do that was to suggest to my patients who I thought could benefit from yoga, why don't you come to the gym and try one of my classes? And it was almost a resounding theme of, yeah, that sounds interesting for sure. And yeah, I would like to learn from you, but there's no way that I'm going into a gym and walking into a class with 30 people and doing yoga for the first time. So I started to realize that there were some major barriers for people. The idea of, you know, going into those classes as a new practitioner to yoga, a lot of intimidation around that. there's also specific things that show up when people are living with pain. It's very common that people have a fear of movement. So not knowing, you know, is this actually going to make my pain worse or is it going to be helpful? That can be a barrier in and of itself. So the solution for me was to kind of build this bridge program, which is now something that I offer online that teaches people not only how to do yoga, but how to do yoga in a way that works well for their bodies and to teach them how to understand where that pain is coming from so you're not triggering it with motion. So I do think that yoga as a blanket statement, yes, it has a lot of potential as a therapeutic tool. However, if it's not being instructed in a way where the sequencing makes sense or we're putting people into positions that are just irritating their back pain, then that's where people are going to have a negative experience.
Yeah, I appreciate that piece. And when people are doing yoga, what advice do you have to people who are just getting started? Because I've watched people who've never done yoga do yoga. I'm like, I wouldn't call that yoga. And then if we had someone who has an injury and they're engaging in yoga, is this one of those things where you're like, you've got to do this with somebody else? Or are there some basic moves that you're recommending people get started with?
So there are some kind of key postures that can be helpful, but it also really depends on the nature of the injury. So somebody who is dealing with a disc injury or a disc herniation, they're going to have the exact opposite movement profile to someone who has a joint irritation in their lumbar spine. So for that reason, I actually don't have a lot of poses that I feel one size fits all for them. But what I will say, it's more about the strategy than the poses themselves. When you're entering into a yoga practice, the first thing that I really like people to know is the meditation on its own has health benefits. It has benefits on the nervous system. It can actually change the mapping in the brain. So even if there's no movement whatsoever, and we're not even talking about physical activity, the thing that differentiates yoga from other types of exercise is the breath mechanics and the mindfulness piece. And you can do that without doing the movements. So consider that the baseline, and then any movements that you're adding in from there, it should be, you know, in a pain-free range of motion, and anything that doesn't feel good for your body, don't do those things, which is really different if you're, you know, used to doing group fitness classes where there's this kind of pressure to just do whatever is being taught. I really try to advocate for people to listen to their own bodies. And if something doesn't feel right when you're in the room, there's a good chance it's not going to feel great when you leave.
It's such a great point. I'm wondering if you can start to break down a little bit the science of mindfulness as it pertains to chronic pain. And we talked about this a little bit before we went live in terms of your unique approach in incorporating those pieces. I just find this incredibly fascinating, the role that our brains have and mindfulness can have in terms of what we're feeling physically in our body.
Mm-hmm. Most of us, I think, there's a bit of a disconnect between body and mind. Our minds are constantly, they're sort of on autopilot for most of us. We have thoughts that are taking place that we are not even registering before they happen. And in the case of pain, sometimes you'll ask what seems like a simple question, you know, what aggravates your pain or what tends to relieve it or what patterns have you noticed with it? And much of the time, people are not able to identify that. I think when you're living with pain, as long as there's any kind of pain happening, that tends to be what our brains focus on. We have a negative bias in our minds. Our brains like to focus and fixate on things that are negative. So that's what they will gravitate toward. Oh, there's still pain there. Okay, I still have a problem. So some of it is it's a mindset piece of teaching people when you're managing pain, it's not so much about totally removing the pain because that might not be as realistic, but changing what that pain looks like and how much it's impacting your quality of life. So the intensity of that pain on a scale of 0 to 10, can we get that number to come down? How often you're experiencing pain? So before it was constant, now maybe it's more intermittent a few times a week, or how long the flare-up is lasting. These are just as important because it will overall change someone's experience with how they're living. And part of that ties into the mindfulness practice, is starting to actually tune in and pay attention to the signals your body is trying to offer you that normally most of us are either ignoring or we're just not recognizing as being there. So starting to pay attention to, well, are there activities or movements that reliably, every time I do that thing, it creates pain afterwards? And likewise, are there certain activities that I can engage in or specific movements or stretches I do that almost always make me feel good? Because the whole idea with shifting chronic pain and decreasing that central sensitization that we talked about is to try to flood the brain with things that make us feel good and that make us feel safe as a way to turn the volume down on the pain signals.
As you're saying that, my brain was like naturally thinking of like a big bowl of popcorn or food. And it's so true. It's like, I'm very uncomfortable over here. So we like open the fridge, we engage in all these other pieces. And if nothing else, well, I mean, there's so much more to it, but I love the notion that mindfulness like actually brings us back and centers on these things, mm-hmm. because when we are not mindful of these pieces and we let our bodies just like flow around and take action without really having that control, often we're making decisions that are perpetuating
the problem. Absolutely. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about your book, Back to Wellness, and the core essence of what it is that you get into. What is the solution that you're really providing for people there?
My book, this is kind of an interesting story. My book wasn't going to be a book. My book was actually written 2 years ago when I was developing the content for the Yoga for Back Pain program. I knew when I made that program that I wanted there to be an educational segment. I felt that was just as important as the movement and meditation. So I started each class with a 15-minute, educational segment on a topic about self-management of pain or teaching people how to understand what was causing their pain. And I kept getting this feedback from people when they would leave my class. You know, that was so interesting and helpful. But as soon as I leave here, I forget everything that you just said. So they asked if I could make some handouts or some sort of hard copy that they could have. That was my project. I put that on my list. I'm like, I'm going to basically type out the notes and transcribe it. And when I did that, I ended up with a 75-page Word document that I thought, this is actually, you know, some relevant information that could be helpful whether or not people are in this yoga program. So that is right. The essence of the book is it's 12 chapters that teaches what causes back pain. So we get into the anatomy of it. What are the common causes? What are the tissues that are involved? We talk about the self-management strategies. So everything from changing up your workstation ergonomics to how you might be doing household chores that might be aggravating your pain. We talk about some of the uses and limitations of diagnostic imaging, which we've touched on in this interview as well. So it's teaching, and then each chapter closes with either instruction of two or three key yoga poses that relate to the content, or there are journal prompts where I ask people to reflect on some of their activities, and there's actually space in the book to jot down notes so that people can kind of move through this at their own pace. And the beginning of the book starts out with a disability questionnaire so people can get a sense of how much their pain is impacting their life. And it closes with that same questionnaire. So there's an actual objective tool built into the book to show you how things have changed over the course of reading it.
I love that you have to know the gap in terms of how that transition's happened. This is how I know things are working as a clinician is people will come in to me and they're like, I think it's just been enough time now. Things are starting to shift and I'm feeling better. Meanwhile, these patients have literally been years with a set of symptoms and we're working together for 6 to 8 weeks and they're like, oh, you know, time heals all things. And I would always I just smile to myself, right? Because part of it is we take a drug and it's like we turn off that stimulus, but we actually start to facilitate the body healing. It heals. Suddenly we're like, oh, wait a second, that pain is gone. So I love that you've included that piece so that we're able to understand where were we and where have we gotten to. It is so super smart. We're just so good at what we do in natural health that if we don't tell you that it's worked, you're not even going to notice. It's amazing. It's so smart. I love what you have put together. I feel like this is a really perfect place within our interview to switch gears where we're not talking about people's pain as much. We have an opportunity to get a little bit of insight on you. And I call these our KPIs or key performance indicators, just like we have them in our business. I believe we have them in our lives as well. And I've got a few questions for you.
I'm ready.
The first one, Dr. Kirsty, what is your most recommended book besides Back to Wellness?
Someone asked me this question yesterday and I gave a different book, and I actually thought about it after and said, okay, I'm going to know the answer to this in the future. One of my favorite books right now is Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Ah, classic. So good. If you haven't read it, just go read it. Just move it up to the top of your list. Such a perfect, perfect answer. What is your favorite health hack?
I feel like this is such an obvious answer, but I just think yoga is amazing. I practice yoga, I would say, daily in some way or another. It's not always physically rolling out my mat, but it really has shaped my life and my healing journey. And so I just sprinkle that everywhere I go.
I should have known that's where we were going to go with that piece. How would you define your purpose?
Okay. This is a bit of a tricky one. And you always get me with this, because when you ask questions about your mission and purpose, this is always the part where I'm like, I don't have this fully defined yet. What I know is that I'm really passionate about using mind-body tools as a way to overcome pain. And it makes me feel really good when I can see the transformation taking place in someone's life, to see how they felt and to see how they could feel. So that drives me. I don't know if that answers your question, but that gets me out of bed every morning.
This is an entrepreneurship podcast. There are no rules. There are only frameworks. So you get to answer it however you want. Last question for you, Dr. Kirsty. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think it's a little bit of both. So I think there's certain qualities that are maybe more inherent, but I also think it is really largely shaped by our life experiences and our support systems. And I definitely know, taking part in different coaching programs, that I think people can be at different stages of their entrepreneurial journey. And that certainly your experiences and being exposed to, you know, training can really elevate that. So I think it's both. And part of it is how much you choose to kind of tap into that side of your personality, if that's something that you are born with.
I love this. Dr. Kirsty Griffiths, you are up to so many amazing things. Your book has just hit bookshelves. Where can we send people to learn more about you and to grab their own copy of Back to Wellness?
So the book is available on Amazon. We can definitely include a link for that. I am on Instagram, The Chiropractic Yogi. And for anyone who's interested, because this book was built in conjunction with that yoga program, so I do have a 20-minute yoga for back pain virtual class that people can attend as well. So we can include that for people too.
Amazing. Fantastic. We will put everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Megan.
Anthropology is the study and science of what makes entrepreneurs tick. It's the confluence of the mindset, strategic thinking, and health that we bring to the table as contributors, as purpose seekers, as individuals building out a better tomorrow. The work that we do on the Anthropology podcast impacts the mindset, the business tactics, and the health of those individuals who are working hard to change the world, to leave a legacy for the future. The best way that we can reach more people with the message of the Anthropology podcast is if you help us share it. If the message that we shared in today's episode is something that resonates with you, or if you know someone who would benefit from hearing it, please send it to them directly. And if you have felt moved by the content that we have shared, I would love it if you could leave a review wherever it is that you pick up your podcast. Until next week, live life on, in, and with purpose. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker, and I will talk to you real soon.